Hi, everybody. I'm an Al-Anon from West Blockton, Alabama, and my name's Bo Templin. And I'm glad to be here. You know, I was the Al-Anon speaker at the very first one 19 years ago, so I talked to him last night when we were discussing that, so I've gone on and penciled it in 19 years from now. And I plan to be back over here. Oh, it's great to be here and see some old friends and to make some new friends. And there's two or three people like Charles sitting in this room that if I stumble or if I forget where I am, they can pick up with my talk and go right on. They're just gluttons for punishment. And that's really not the truth. He's in here to make sure I must stay honest. That's the very reason he's here. So I'm glad to be here. I want to thank you for inviting me to come over here and be a part of your celebration. I love it. Celebrate the miracle. I love these conventions and these roundups because to me and to Shirley, we look on them as a party. And that's what we're here doing this weekend. We're celebrating our recovery. Okay? Now, as I share my story with you, you'll find out that Labor Day weekend, 1982, that's the way I was introduced to this way of life. It was at a party. And it was at the Tuscaloosa, Alabama, AA Al-Anon anniversary. And that was September the 4th, 1982. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in my story. But that's the day that I started the journey that I've been on since then, and has led me to being right here with you this afternoon so far. And what a journey it's been. What up and down and all around, but what a journey it's been. And I love the parties. I go to all of them I can. Thank you. Thank you. Some of you were some of you gals in here, I think, were at the women's conference last weekend. And was it Me to Me? And you met my wife and Shirley and my daughter Sissy. And they're at home today shopping. Y'all pray for me. Sissy is newly engaged, so Dennis and I are batching it. Stand up, Dennis. Let them see who you are. Dennis is finding out that he cannot ever do Sissy wrong, because if he does, there's people all over the world that will come and get him. Because you see, Sissy's been raised in Alateen, Al-Anon, and AA. And so we're glad to be here. Dennis and I are, and we're glad to be part of the party. There's another thank you that I need to do right quick, and I've been trying to do this lately when I get an opportunity to get behind podiums like this, in rooms like this, because I don't think we in Al-Anon are doing this enough now. We've let up. We've changed the way we do things some. But I want to take just a minute. I want to talk to just the members of Alcoholics Anonymous that are sitting in this room. And if you're in this room this afternoon and you're a member of AA, from the very bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you. Thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for two reasons. Thank you, number one, for being there. July 29th, 1982, when my gal reached out her hand. Because you see, the bottle had her. And I couldn't do anything about it. And I was driving myself crazy trying to find a way to get her sober and keep her sober. And, of course, you know I never found that button. And on July 29, 1982, when she had that moment of clarity that I believe all recovering people have, and she reached her hand out to AA, you had the hand of AA there for her. And you put your arms around her, and you took her in, and you loved her back to health. And she didn't have to die from a fatal disease that we didn't even know she had. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous put their arms around her and loved her back to hell. How could I ever repay the debt of gratitude? You saved my gal's life. How could I ever repay you? How could I ever say thank you enough? And that's one of the things I want you to know before you leave here today, that I'm grateful that you had the program there and that you took her in and put your arms around her and loved her back to hell. I want to thank you for another reason. I want to thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for knowing from the very beginning that this thing called alcoholism is a family disease. Now, you see, I know that you knew it from the beginning because I'm one of those Al-Anons that's fortunate enough to have been raised in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous. That's old-time stuff. I was raised by old-timers. And it's right there in your textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous, in the 8th and 9th chapters, that I learned that AA knew from the very beginning that this thing is a family disease. Now, if you've been taught the history of our fellowships, and if you've been raised by old-timers, you've been taught the history of our fellowships. We believe in knowing our history. And if you've been taught the history of our fellowships, you know that the very first AA meetings were family meetings because they were fashioned after the Oxford Group meetings. And the Oxford Group met in people's homes. The Oxford Group didn't have a church out there. They went to different people's houses, and they met in the houses, and the family went together. So thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, for knowing that the family was involved in this thing and for including us from the very beginning. And for having this 12-step program in place so that in 1951, when Al-Anon was born, and we asked you for your 12 steps, you opened up your arms and you said, why, sure you can. And here's what we want you to do, Bo. We want you to come on in. Learn how to take these 12 spiritual principles that we have and implement them in your life on a daily basis so that you can learn how to live happy, joyous, and free, and then not be dependent on what another person does or does not do. And for that today, I'm eternally grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you so much. When I introduced myself today, I introduced myself as an Al-Anon. Now, I won't talk about that for a minute, because when I got here September 4th, 1982, I thought being married to Shirley made me an Al-Anon. Now, what I've learned is being married to Shirley qualifies me for Al-Anon. And there are several things that I do today on a real regular basis in order to stand up here and tell you that I'm a member of Al-Anon. First thing I do in order to tell you I'm a member of Al-Anon is I suit up and show up and occupy that chair in an Al-Anon meeting on a real regular basis. Real regular basis. Now, I know there's more to it than occupying that chair. I know that this is a program of action. I know that you can't get it by osmosis because, by golly, I tried. The first 7 months that I was around this thing, not in it, but around it, I was suiting up, showing up, occupying that chair. Okay? But I wasn't getting into the deal. You know, let me explain it to you this way. I can take that chair, take it out to the back of my lot, set it in the middle of the chicken coop, go out there and occupy that chair in the middle of that chicken coop every day for 20 years. And guess what? Yeah, I still won't be a chicken. Ah, but listen to me. If I do that for 20 years, at the end of that time, I'm going to know a whole lot about chickens. And I'm going to know how the successful chickens are getting it done. So see, I believe that it begins with me suiting up and showing up and occupying that chair in that Al-Anon meeting with those winners that were there for me and watching what they're doing and listening to what they're saying, and I begin to get an idea of the actions that I'm going to have to take if I want to be like y'all when I grow up. Now, let's make sure that we're on the same page here. You're going to hear me talk a lot about action. I am not talking about activity. Okay? We've got action here and we've got activity, and both of them are important parts of this thing. Okay? Activity is chairing a meeting. Activity is putting the literature out. Activity is getting on a committee to put one of these things on. Activity is making the coffee. Activity is washing the cups. We still have real cups in Bessemer. And however, we have bought a dishwasher in the last few years. But that's activity. Okay? The action that I'm talking about is numbered 1 through 12. That's the action I'm talking about, the program of action. Okay? So I do know that this is a program of action, but I also know that the activity is necessary to get me here until I can have that moment of clarity and know that I got to go further than that. Okay? So the first thing I got to do in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon is suit up and show up and occupy that chair. The second thing I do, and this is just what's worked for Bo over the past 26 years and some, is I have to have a home group. Now, my home group is a Wednesday night discussion group there in Bessemer, Alabama. We call it the Harmony Group, because if you show up on a good night, it just might be. But when I got here in 1982, I didn't need a home group. See, when I got here, I didn't need Al-Anon. There was nothing wrong with me. See? And I told you that with a smile on my face. I believed it. I believed it. It wasn't denial. It was delusion. I was living it. You see, my wife had gone through one of those treatment centers. And she came out of that treatment center sober. And I was convinced that if she never drank again, we were going to be okay. Yeah. Now, that treatment center that she went to had a thing up there called Family Week. And it's where me and two teenage kids, Mike was 15, Sissy was 13, me and two teenage kids were asked to come up there and move in on Monday and live up there at the place until Friday and be a part of that treatment thing. Now, they call it Family Week. I call it Hell Week. But it was a beginning. It was a beginning, you see. And while I was up there in Hell Week, I heard a couple of things that really made an impression on me. Okay? First thing I heard one of those counselors up there say, the ones that stay sober when they leave here are the ones that go to AA. And in the snap of your fingers, my job in life changed. Yeah. Because, see, I already told you, I had come to believe that if she didn't drink, we was going to be okay. He just told me if she went to AA, she wouldn't drink. So I became the driver. Yeah. And when they let her out on 12 noon of Saturday of Labor Day weekend, we started that 90 meetings in 90 days. We were sitting right down there on that front row. As speaker say something important, I'm popping Charlie with my elbow. Yeah. I was listening real close. Because, see, I knew she was in a fog. And she was going to have some questions when we got home, and I needed to be able to answer. Yeah. And here we are. We're making those 90 meetings in 90 days around Bessemer and Hueytown and Birmingham. And I learned something about you AAs during that 90-day period. I learned that y'all got real tunnel vision about a couple of areas of your program. And one of the areas you got a serious case of tunnel vision about is something called closed meetings. Because, see, the night show came when we showed up there at Bessemer, which was to become our home group down the road. It took me 7 months. It was to become our home group, and those guys met me at the door and said, Bo, you can't stay in here tonight. This is a closed meeting for alcoholics only. I said, hey guys, y'all don't understand. And they kind of giggled like some of y'all did. And they said, yeah, we do. But there's a room there's a meeting right over in that room. Maybe you won't try that. Well, see, I didn't have old-time sponsorship at that time. It took me 7 months to get old-time sponsorship. The first 7 months that I was here, I was in the ism of the disease. In other words, the first 7 months I was here, I sponsored myself, ISM. Now, that's right, I had a fool for a sponsor. Let me tell you something, I had a bigger fool for a sponsee. But God, I wish y'all could have sat in on some of those meetings we had. Beth, talking about last night about that committee. Oh, man, we could call some meetings. Boy, I tell you, we could solve some problems. Yeah. So, see, when I got old-time sponsorship, one of the first things they told me was, Bo, you will now begin to show up at every meeting you go to at least 30 minutes early. prepared to stay until it's over. And Jim and Fran told me, said, now a lot of AA and Al-Anon meetings are over in an hour, but not all of them are. So you'll show up 30 minutes early prepared to stay till it's done. And many nights we're there at Bessemer till 11, 11:30, midnight, whatever it takes if the family's in pain, you know. But I didn't have that night. I hadn't gotten that old. So when I went over there to that door, he directed me to that door. It was 3 minutes to eight for an 8 o'clock meeting. And I stopped at the door and took a head count, and there was 23 women and one other guy. And I hustled down front and got a seat by him, and we had the meeting, and the meeting's over, and he turned around and introduces himself to me. And I said, Kirby, I sure am glad there's at least one other guy here. He started laughing. He said, Bo, I'm moving to Panama City, Florida in the morning. Said, this is my last meeting in Bessemer. Now, all these years later, I look back and I see that that was just God taking care of Bo. See, and I would have told you right then that God had forgotten where I lived. But see, God just got curving out of town because I was so sick. It took all 23 of them women for me. And if he'd have been there and had a problem, I don't know what we'd have done. And so then one of the ladies came up, and she introduced herself to me, and I said, hi, glad to meet you, and stuck my hand out, and all she wanted to hug my neck. So, well, and then the next one came up, and I stuck my hand out, and she grabbed my hand, she wanted to hug my neck. I'll tell you, I wasn't real huggable when I got here. Now, I belong to one of the most huggable groups in the world today. We hug you when you get there. We hug you when you leave. In the middle of a meeting, if it's evident that you're in pain, somebody's liable to come around the room and give you a big old hug. See, my home group believes in the healing power of hugs. But I wasn't at that point when I got here. So after about the third lady, I stopped by. I said, oh, hold on here just a minute. So let's have an understanding here. I said, I'm not going to be coming in here much. I'm sure this is a real good program, and I know that some of you gals have really, really benefited from it. But you see, my wife's sober, and she's not drinking, and they won't let me stay out there with her tonight. And so, I brought her to the meeting, so I'll sit in here with y'all. And you know what them old-timers did. They just said, why, Bo, that's fine. That's okay. You just come in here whenever you can. And then one of them, they won't let me call them old-timers anymore, one of those seasoned veterans came up to me, and we had folding chairs, and she took one of the folding chairs and took it over by the door, just inside the door, and she put that folding chair right there, and she said, Bo, from now on, this is Bo's seat. She said, and on the nights that you come in here, this is as far in the room as you have to come. And if there's anybody else in this seat, you come get me and I'll move them. She said, this is your chair. And then they did something that they still won't admit today, but I figured it out. They assigned one of those gals to me. Yeah. Now, she changed on a monthly basis because we're an old group and we believe in rotation. I won't tell you what her job was. See, this is how old-timers work. See, in order to tell you what her job was, I have to tell you how we close meetings at my home group. We close meetings at my home group by standing, making a circle, holding hands, and saying the Lord's Prayer. And I'm so glad y'all are doing that here. There's some places around that have changed that. We've never had a meeting that thought about changing it. We're not going to change it. It's the closing with the Lord's Prayer is part of our group. My sponsors, being old-timers, have taught me that the Lord's Prayer ends with the word amen. Consequently, I'm not allowed to say anything after the word amen. Jim Drysdale told me not too long before he died, he said, Bo, if you'll bring me a copy of the Bible and show me in the Bible where it says, on the Lord's Prayer where it says amen, keep coming back. He said, then I'll let you say it. But he said, it says we close with the Lord's Prayer, and the Lord's Prayer ends with the word amen. So you see, I would come in the meeting and I would sit back there in my chair, and then when the meeting was over, I didn't mind closing with the Lord's Prayer. I'd get up there and I'd get in the circle and hold hands. Well, while we had our eyes closed saying the Lord's Prayer, ever who was assigned to me that month, she slipped out and got between me and the door. Yeah. Because, see, they knew when I said amen, I was going to throw him hands down, head for the door. I wasn't getting into that hugging. Well, her job was to intercept me and give me that one hug on the way out, see. Well, I wouldn't argue much so much about one hug. 23, yeah. One, I just hug on the way out. Well, of course, as she hugged my neck, she'd whisper them words, you know, in my ear. Now, you keep coming back, Bo, because we need you. Okay. If you needed me, I mean, I wanted to help. What I didn't tell you was I had been listening, and I had been reading, and my miracle was in the process of happening, see. My miracle was in the process of happening. And what these gals were doing, they were using these hooks on me to keep me there until my miracle happened. See? And the first hook that they used was those hugs. They taught me to become huggable. Yeah. Let me tell you about another hook that they used on me from the very beginning. And it's a hook that we talked about last night. It's a hook called laughter. Yeah. Remember the laughter when you got first? Just don't forget the laughter that we heard when we first got here. See, the laughter in my life when I got here, first got here, was that kind that hurts your teeth. Huh, huh, huh. That kind? No, I'm talking about real laughter from the gut. Real laughter. That it started that first meeting that night. That seasoned veteran there, she told her story. It was a speaker meeting. When they got the meeting opened and introduced her and she walked down front, she said, "Hi, my name's Doris, and it's been 14 years since I had to plan a murder." Yeah, and the whole room erupted in laughter. Everybody except me. I didn't laugh. I'm sitting there and I said, "I'd be doggone if I'd ever say that out loud." Nobody. Because you see, I'm just like some of y'all. I'd been planning that murder too. Yeah. I was going to kill her and tell God she died. So let's don't ever forget that laughter. Let's don't ever, ever lose it. We got to keep that around. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. This has just been becoming aware to me in the last couple of years, and I want to share it with you. You know, we're living in a program of miracles. Each one of us that's sitting in here that's active in this way of life is a miracle. And the whole program itself is a miracle. And one of the things that my God loves me so much, that one of the things he's done is he's allowed me to become aware a lot of times when miracles are happening right around me. And I think one of the greatest things that God has given me is the ability to watch that newcomer and watch the miracle happen in their life. And one of the very first signs of that miracle happening is the laughter. The laughter. They come in with a frown. They come in because they're scared. They come in because they're in pain. They come in, they're confused. And then if we can just get them to come back. Come on back for another meeting. Come on back. Pretty soon they begin to see that there's laughter all around them. And you'll watch them one night, and somebody will say something funny, and they'll just sit there and look at the floor. Next week, their eyes are up, and somebody says something funny, and they make eye contact with them. 3 or 4 weeks of that, and you begin to see their lips turn up, and the miracle is happening. Right there in front of us, the miracle is happening. Oh, what a deal. What a deal. Yeah. I love the laughter. Let me tell you about the last hook. Let me tell you about one more hook that they used, the last one I'm going to talk about. It's the most important one in my life today. And it's a hook called unconditional love. And those gals started covering me up with that unconditional love that very first night. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I just knew that they never asked me for anything. My life wasn't lived that way, and yours wasn't either. It was all a trade-off before we got here, wasn't it? I do something for you, you do something for me. If I don't need anything right now, we hang it up here and I call it in when I need it. You know, that's the way we lived our life. I get here and these gals begin to just absolutely cover me up with unconditional love. And I don't understand it. And then I go to a meeting one night and somebody has a meeting on unconditional love. And I can put a name on it then. And I can see what it is and know what it is. And, of course, then I do like I usually do. I self-appointed myself the king of sopping up unconditional love in the southeastern United States. Because I liked it. Well, the very next thing, of course, being an Al-Anon is, the very next thought that comes in my mind is, well, if you're so good at sopping it up, what kind of job are you doing at giving it away? So I set out to learn how to become the best I could at giving it away. And I'm traveling around, and I'm talking to seasoned veterans all around. And then I'm sitting in San Diego, California, in spring at their spring roundup. And I was the Al-Anon speaker at the spring roundup out there. And we're in there on Friday night. And the AA speaker is opening it up, and he's making his talk, and he gave me the answer about unconditional love. Now, he didn't know that till I had coffee with him the next day and explained it. Because, you see, he didn't call it unconditional love. He called it his relationship with God. He stood up there. His man had over 30 years sobriety, and he said, let me tell you something, folks. He said, the most important thing in my life today is my relationship with God. And he said, that's what I spend most of my time on today, is working on my relationship with God and making sure that I'm spiritually fit. Now, he's one of the two people in my life that have explained it this way. And the other one was from right up here in North Carolina. His name was Tom Brady. And he said, I call my relationship with God the vertical. And he said, I call my relationship with you the horizontal. And he said, what I've learned over the past 30-something years is as long as I'm okay vertically, I'm okay horizontally. When I'm okay with God, I'm okay with you. When I'm spiritually fit, I'm part of. He said, so today when I begin to have problems with you or it or them, he said, it's no longer necessary for me to come and confront you or it or them. He said, I go to my sponsor, I go to my spiritual mentor, and I say, look, something's not right spiritually. And we get in the book and we read and we pray and we talk and we get me back to the point where I'm okay with God. And he said, all of a sudden, when I'm okay spiritually again, the problems that I was having with you are not nearly as bad as I thought they were. So he said, I spend my time today trying to be the best child of God that I can be on a daily basis. Because he said, when I'm spiritually fit and I'm the best child of God that I can be, then God uses me as a channel of his love. And God loves you through me. And he said, now here's your part of the deal, and I'm going to make the, I took him up, and I'm going to offer the same thing to you today. I want you to go to work on your relationship with God so that you can be the best child of God that you can be on a daily basis. And then God will use you as a channel of his love, and God will love me through you. And then he gave me my answer. He said, oh, and by the way, God's love is unconditional. Unconditional love. I've been running around all over the country trying to figure out how to be the best I could be at unconditional love. What I needed to do was learn how to be spiritually fit. Spiritually fit. Child of God. And then the deal works. The deal works. So these are the hooks that those gals used on me to keep me there until my miracle happened. The next thing that's necessary for me to tell you that I'm an Al-Anon is I'm sponsored. I've already talked a little bit about that sponsorship. Sponsored by old-timers, thank God, sponsored by old-timers. My original sponsors, and we'll talk about this a little more in a minute, but my original sponsors came into this program in 1961. And then several years ago, Jim did something that we hadn't planned on, and I certainly didn't think that he was supposed to do. He died on us. And then Fran, God love her, she began to experienced some dementia, and she's in an assisted living home now. So she wasn't, you know, available to me. And I think that's one of the toughest things I've had to do since I've been here is to get new sponsors. But about the time that that was going on with Jim and Fran, well, Shirley's sponsor died. And so Shirley and I looked at each other and we said, well, you know, both of us, because neither one of us going to go along without a sponsor. And we knew this couple down in Louisiana that we had become real close to and that we thought a lot of. And we called them up and we met them and we talked to them and we asked Joe and Glenda, we said, we know this is unusual, but let's try it. Would you sponsor us as a couple? We're not talking about step work. We're way past that. We're talking about living problems. And Joe and Glenda agreed, and that's been working now for about 5 years, and it's working really, really neat. Really, really neat. Because they're older and they're wiser, and they're both thoroughly involved in these programs. So, the next part of having a sponsor is getting to be a sponsor. Oh, that's a ride. That's a ride. I got a phone call this morning trying to go in there and eat breakfast. And I'm sponsoring this boy that's got a teenage son, and we're raising kids. And we started out several years ago. He's a single father, and he had four boys. And we've got three of them shuffled on out, and we're still raising. So I'm getting to re-raise kids. But that's okay. That's all right. The last thing I do in order to tell you I'm a member of Al-Anon's, I take those 12 simple steps that they read up here today. 12 simple steps for a very complicated person. And the best of my life, I incorporate them in my life on a daily basis, the best of my ability. And I get up each morning and I have that little talk with God. I talk much about getting over there on the east side of the house with a cup of coffee and the sun coming in the window and 7 meditation books. And, you know, I'm not much about that. I hit the floor running, and it's about 3 steps, 4 steps from my bed to the shower. And that's a good place to talk to God, in the shower. Because I just talk to him like he's a buddy of mine, because he is. You know, I say, here we are, God. Here we are. Now come on in here and you take over this thing and you run it today. You run it today. And then that takes all the hard work off of me. All I got to do then is dry off, put some clothes on, go out there and do his will. Boy, that's a ride. That's a ride. We'll talk a little more about that. Yeah. So these are the things that I do in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon. Now, July 29th, 1982. And they're putting Shirley out of that treatment center at 12 noon on Saturday, Labor Day weekend. We didn't think y'all would have meetings on holidays. We were told to go about 50 miles down the road to the Bessemer AA group. We could not even go by the house because they knew if we went to the house, we'd stay. Shirley had been up there 38 days. And said, you go straight to the Bessemer AA group, and you'll meet up with a bunch of people that are going to go 40 miles on down the road to Tuscaloosa. And you're going to go to Tuscaloosa's AA Al-Anon anniversary. Now, this was our introduction to this way of life. So we went down to the Bessemer AA group. Now, I had an aunt and uncle there, so that wasn't all strange to me, you know. This was 82, and Aunt Katie and Uncle James each had 20 years of sobriety. So we met them down there, and we got into this convoy. And, boy, we started, you know, we don't convoy to meetings anymore. I miss that. I just miss that. There's just many meetings around. You don't have to convoy anymore. Me and Dave and some of us talking last night about convoying to meetings. It used to be fun. Let me tell you about this convoy, and all I can tell you is the story grows as it goes. I'm up to where now there was 85 cars in that convoy. Now, you should have seen them. There was 2 doors, 4 doors, Suburban, station wagons. There was a wrecker. There was a taxi cab. There was motorcycles. There was Everett trucks with and without camper shells. There was everything you could think of. Labor Day weekend in Alabama is just like Labor Day weekend over here. It's hot. Every one of them was a drunk vehicle. By that, I mean there wasn't a straight piece of sheet metal nowhere. Not a one of them had an air conditioner at work. We had enough people for 125 vehicles. And we start shoving and pushing in his arms and his legs, and off to Tuscaloosa we go. We get down there on the campus of the university, and we all pull up out there like you're circling the wagons. Park together, and everybody piles out. The end of the hall we go. And we walk into a room, and there was 500 of y'all. Yeah. Cleaned up, dressed up, foo-foo juice on, running around there, laughing, hugging, having a blast. Having a blast. Tell you that. Male Al-Anon speaker. Female AA speaker. Today I cannot tell you who he was or where he was from or what he said. Because, see, I wasn't there about me. I was the driver, remember? I can tell you who that lady was. She became a friend of ours. Yeah. And she's now moved off down to Baton Rouge, where close to where Dennis comes from down there. She's still sober today. And Sissy got her first resentment because she was 13 years old. And they raffled off a red and white football that Bear Bryant had set autographed, and she didn't win it. And she got her first resentment. We went home from that meeting at night, me and Shirley and two teenagers, and we sat down in our den floor. And the kids got out a two-pound bag of chocolate chip cookies, and we got a gallon of milk out, and we sat down in the middle of the floor, and we started talking about y'all. Because, you see, we had fallen in love with you. That thing about attraction rather than promotion. We didn't know what you had. We didn't know what you were about. We just knew that whatever it was infinitely better than what we brought. And we made a commitment as a family that night that we would give this thing our best shot. And that commitment has led us so far to being right here. We asked the kids to go to 4 Alateen meetings, one a week for 4 weeks. The strongest, most active Alateen group in the state of Alabama and at that time was right there in Bessemer, Alabama, which was to become our home group. They went to their 4 meetings, one a week for 4 weeks, and we sat down and we talked to them about it. Sissy said, "I love it. I love it." She said, "I want to go to every meeting I can go to." Mike, 15 years old, he was blonde head of hair, blue eyes, he's good looking. Had a motorcycle. Mike had some other things to do. It's called chasing. The boy was good at it, too. And he told his mom, he said, "Mom, it's not for me." He said, "I can't sit in that room and talk about all that." He said, but you know, when you get one of those medallion things, that I'll go because I have cake. And He said, "Of course, when you go down to Gulf Shores or Panama City for a convention, I'll go." You see. And all I can tell you about that is that when you live in a home where it's active alcoholism, you're affected. When you live in a home where the 12 steps and spiritual principles are practiced as a way of life, you are affected. You are affected. Mike didn't claim to be a member of Alateen, but Mike's life changed. His life changed. So look around over there, and Shirley's got her a sponsor. That sponsor's got her in the book, and she's growing spiritually, and she's getting well. Sissy's going to Alateen. Mike's picking it up from her. I'm sitting there occupying a chair doing nothing. Doing nothing. And this went on for 7 months. And I remember the morning. It was a Saturday morning, and it was raining. God, it was raining, and I was supposed to play golf. Yeah, oh, poor me. Oh, poor me. Sitting there in my den in Hueytown, Alabama, late 1982, first part of 1983, the only thing on TV on Saturday morning was cartoons. And I couldn't play. Oh, poor me. Shirley walked through the den, and I think she said good morning. I don't really remember what she said. I just know that I went off, and I ranted, and I raved, and she just stood there till I got through. And she looked at me when I got through, and she said, well, who you going to blame this one on, big boy? I ain't had a drink in 7 months. And my moment of clarity, you see, all of a sudden I knew that what I'd been hearing you gals say in those meetings was true, that this was about me. So I asked Shirley, I said, what are you doing? You're getting better. What are you doing? She said, I got a sponsor. We got a book. She said, I'm working the steps, and I've reestablished my contact with God, and I'm growing spiritually. Whoa. I said, how do I do this? She said, you go back to your meeting, and you get you a sponsor. And I went back to my Al-Anon meeting. No men. Kervin was gone. But there was a lady there, and she was old enough to be my mama. And I had known this lady for a lot of years through having some business dealings with her husband and her son. And I knew that she was well respected in the community. I had been sitting in meetings with her, and I knew that she knew what was going on. And I went up to Fran, and I said, Fran, I've got to have some help. Would you sponsor me? And if she was here today, she would tell you she had a temporary lapse of sanity and agreed. But she put a condition on it. Now, this is a lady that's a retired school principal. There's a disciplinarian side to her that I didn't know existed till I got her for a sponsor. And she put a condition on it. She said, Bo, I'll be glad to, but there's one condition. And I said, well, what's that? She said, I'll sponsor you the way I've been sponsored. It's the only way I know. And that's in the steps. And if you're willing today to make a conscious commitment to me to take these 12 spiritual principles and implement them in your life, then I'm ready to go with you. And we started that walk. Now, that's about 90 days later, we realized that I needed to talk to a man. She was wise enough. She said, go out there in that AA room. You pick you a man that's working a good 12-step program, and we'll bring him into this relationship. So I went out there, and I happened to pick the one that she'd been married to forever. And Jim and Fran became my mentors. And this is 7 months into this thing. And I began this walk. Somewhere along the line, I decided it was time to write an inventory. Now, I didn't tell them. Didn't ask them. And, you know, here's the kind of pigeon I was. That's what they call me, is a pigeon. Okay? You know why they call them pigeons? You know what pigeons do? They eat all your food and crap all over you. Ah, but listen to this. Properly trained, a pigeon carries a message. Oh, how about that? Yeah. So I was the kind of pigeon that I didn't call till I had run it in the ditch. You know. So I ran this inventory thing in the ditch, and I picked up the phone, and I called Fran, and I'm just rah, 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 rah. And she was the greatest listener in the world. And when I finally wound down, she said, this sounds pretty serious. She said, Jim will be home at 5:30 and the coffee will be made, be at our kitchen table. Now, that was not unusual for me to get those kind of instructions. So at 5:30 that afternoon, I was at their house. The coffee was made. Jim came in, sat down, said, what's going on? I said, Jim, I'm trying to write this inventory, and I am having all kind of trouble. And before Jim could say anything, Fran spoke up and said, well, sure you are. You've got to be in trouble. I said, Fran, where you get this wisdom? 30 seconds ago, you didn't know anything about this. She said, oh, Bo said, if you're trying to do the fourth step, you're in trouble because you ain't through with the third step, son. Said, you still got your Southern Baptist God sitting up there judging you and punishing you. And until you do something about your concept of God, you're not going to go much further in this program. And that's when Jim, my AA mentor, reached out at his home and grabbed me by the hand and said, come with me, Bo. And we left his kitchen and we went down the hall to his study. And we sat down in his study at his desk and he turned around and he got the book. You know what book he got? The textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous. And he brought that book back around and he opened it up between us and he opened it up to the chapter to the agnostic. And he took this Al-Anon into that book, into that chapter that afternoon, and it was right there that I found the God that I have in my life today. It came right off of the pages of the book. It's no longer a God of judging and punishing. It's a God of infinite power and infinite love. Can you imagine? Infinite, inexhaustible, never-ending power and love. That's the God I got today. I want to tell you something. God's so busy loving me and forgiving me today, he wouldn't have time to judge me and punish me if he wanted to. And let me assure you, I keep him busy loving me and forgiving me. So now I've got this new concept of God, and I said, boy, I'm off and running now. And I was. Running just as hard away from him as I could go. Because, see, in that Southern Baptist church, when you turned it all over to God, you had to become a song director. Or a Sunday school teacher. Or some of them even became missionaries. And I didn't want much to do with any of that right then. So you see, I have the kind of God that loves me so much that he'll allow me to run just as hard as I want to run. And he'll allow me to get just as miserable as I want to get. And as soon as I've run all I can run and I'm as miserable as I can get, and I turn around, he's closer than my next breath to take the pain away. But you see, I have to realize over and over again that God has never taken away my right to self-will. I have to give that to him. And I can take it back anytime I want to. And I'm running, and I'm getting miserable. And I walk in the kitchen one morning, I look at Shirley, and I said, God, I don't want to go to work. She said, well, stay home. I said, I don't want to stay home. I said, I am so miserable inside my own skin, I don't know what to do. I finally decided I'd go to work. I could be miserable there and get paid for it. So I tried to get to work that morning, and I couldn't even make it to work. It was about 5 minutes to eight, and I pulled my truck out of traffic there on the busiest street in Bessemer, Alabama. And I sat there on the side of that street and I beat on the steering wheel and I did what I know today was my version of the third step prayer. Because what I said was, God, I don't know what I've got that you can use. And God, I don't know where we're going to have to go or what we're going to have to do. But whatever I've got, God, and wherever we got to go and whatever we got to do, let's get busy. Because I can't fight you anymore, God. I surrendered. Let me tell you something. Good things start happening after that. Spiritual growth began to come. Our family was already beginning to come back together. Now I could be a part of it. And recovery was there, you know. And we're getting ready. We're 5.5 years now into this thing, and we're getting ready to take our first vacation. Sissy's been off at college for her first year of college and is coming home for the summer. Oh, things were just beautiful. Were beautiful. We were going to take the Amtrak train and go from Birmingham to Washington, D.C. and visit some kin folks up there. And on Tuesday night, before we were to leave that weekend, we opened the door and three policemen told us that Mike, our 20-year-old son, had been killed instantly by a drunk driver. And I share this with you for two reasons. Number one, it's part of my story. and you need to know that. Number two, and this is what I'm fixing to share with you, I want to share with you your part in this. Because this is what's so fantastic, what's so powerful. It was almost midnight when those three policemen told us that. I didn't even think to call my mother or to call my sister. The only one I could think to call was Jim and Fran. And I had Fran on the other end of the line. She happened to answer the phone, and she said, "Bo, you got to hang the phone up." I said, "No, I can't do that, Fran." I had her voice on the other end. I had her. I said, "Why have I got to hang this phone up?" And she said, "Because I can't come to you while I'm talking to you on the phone." Well, let me tell you something, folks. 12 steps on the wall like we have in our clubhouses. Just 12 steps on the wall. It's 12 steps on a page. It's just 12 steps in a book. 12 steps in action is something to behold. Something to behold. I am convinced that when people like us gather together with a common problem looking for the solution, that we create a spiritual power that my simple mind is not capable of comprehending. But let me tell you something, folks, that spiritual power is here this weekend. And I hope you feel it. I hope you feel it. Within 45 minutes of us getting the message of Mike's death, AA and Al-Anon was in our home. All the family came and they stayed and had to go home. The church came, brought that fried chicken and tater salad, and they left. Y'all came and stayed. Yeah, that's the difference. Y'all came and stayed. You came in the door and you said, "Whoa, we're not here to explain this. We don't understand this. We don't have any explanation. We're here because we know that you're hurting. And we got open arms and big hearts and soft shoulders, and we're here to put our arms around you and love you through this thing if you will allow us to." Well, that was May 17, 1988, and y'all been loving us through it right on all along the way. All along the way. Yeah. That family that we were going to meet up there in Silver Spring, it was Shirley's uncle. He's a deacon in the Southern Baptist Church. Had been for years. So when we called him and told him the deal, well, he just got in the car, just came right on down there. Mike was killed about 9 o'clock on Tuesday night, and about 9 o'clock Wednesday night, Robert was at the house. And he stayed until Sunday. He got ready to go back home on Sunday. He sat down at the kitchen table with me and Shirley, and he said, "I want to tell you folks something." He said, "I don't know a whole lot about this AA and Al-Anon and Alateen thing. But whatever it is, my God, y'all stay where you are. Don't you leave those people." He said, "I've sat in your room, that big chair in your house for the last 4 or 5 days, and I've watched them come and go." And he said, "And I felt closer to God than I've ever felt in my home or my church." And he said, "The thing that kept thrilling me more than anything was nobody talked about God. God was here. God was here." And so we started this walk through this deep, dark valley. And I'm fixing to share something with you that I know. I know that I have walked through the deepest, darkest valley that any daddy will ever have to walk through. Oh, if something happened to Sissy, it'd be just as deep and just as dark. But it wouldn't be any deeper or any darker. So you see, I've already walked through the deepest, darkest valley that a daddy will ever have to walk through. The great news that I'm here to share with you is I never took one step of that walk by myself. I couldn't. I was incapable. But you see, I had two things that I needed. I had you, and I had God. And what I know today, not something I believe or something I think, what I know today, there is absolutely nothing that thing called the world out there can throw at me that I can't walk through as long as I got you in this hand and God in this hand. Why am I still coming back to meetings? Why am I real regular? It's where the power is. It's where the power is. Got to come to the power. It's where God loves me through you. So we began to come out where we could see the light, and Bob showed up in Sissy's life, and He did not show up in her life on a great white steed. He showed up in her life astride the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had already always told Sissy that when your knight in shining armor comes along, have him come see me with a financial statement. Well, having known Bob through his 5 years of sobriety, I said, don't waste that time. But a five-year chip will do good. So Bob and Sissy, they dated for about a year, and then they got married. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I get to tell about the wedding. See, when Shirley's with me, she tells about the wedding. I just wish y'all could have been there. Bob and Sissy decided that they wanted to get married in the same church that Shirley and I got married in. Because, see, if Shirley will behave herself till April the 30th, yeah, we'll celebrate 45 years of marriage. See, that's because we're here. So anyhow, this is a Southern Baptist church in Hueytown. And they said, well, we want to get married out there at that church. And so we had a family week counselor at the treatment center that was a retired Methodist minister. When Howard heard about it, he said, won't nobody marry that couple but me. So we showed up out there at that Saturday at the church. And Howard comes in with he's a Methodist minister wearing a Catholic robe that he borrowed from somebody. Doing a Methodist ceremony in a Southern Baptist church. Now, we lit a big candle down there for Mike, because you see, Mike's just in another room. And we opened that thing with a serenity prayer, because most everybody there was y'all. And we closed it with the Lord's Prayer. And I've still got a deep, deep resentment at my wife today because she would not let me pass the basket. I had a good crowd there. So then it was time for Shirley and I to do something that we've been wanting to do for a long time. And because Bob and Sissy moved into their condominium and Shirley and I were there with the big house and the swimming pool and all that kind of stuff that we really didn't use enough, you know. And so I told Shirley, I said, well, I've always wanted to live in the woods. It's time to go. So we called Bob and Sissy and said, come over for dinner Sunday. We're going to want to tell you what we're going to do. So we got there. Well, Bob and Sissy looked and said, oh, we think that's a great idea. When are we going? We. And Shirley had the greatest moment of clarity that other than her sobriety that she's ever had. She looked at me and she said, if they go, it'll be two houses. And thank goodness. Now, we couldn't afford to build two houses, but we could afford to buy two houses. So we found us 2 acres out in the middle of the woods, and we're land barons. And we put a bulldozer on there and cleaned off enough space and we put a manufactured home on top of the hill for me and Sissy for me and Shirley, and then one down at the bottom of the hill for Bob and Sissy. And we call it Serenity Hill, because if you show up on a good day, when everything's going right, you just might find some serenity out there. And we started putting our lives back together. That was 1997 when we moved out there. 1999, Shirley and I are 3.5 hours from home, and we get a phone call. And all I can tell you is that if you're ever in a casino and they page you and tell you to come to the security office and you know you hadn't done anything wrong, then you can just about bet something is wrong. So we got to the security office and they said, call us phone number. We called it and it was one of Sissy's friends. She put Sissy on the phone and Sissy said, Mom, Dad said, y'all need to come home. Said, I just got the reports back from the doctor and said, I've got an aneurysm in my brain. 30 years old. Yeah. So we jump in the van and we start back home. And it's raining hard. And I'm hollering at God. Well, I mean, I just went off. I mean, you know, what's the deal, God? You got my boy. We're trying to live right and do good. What is the deal? And, boy, I mean, I'm all over the road, and I'm beating on the steering wheel, and I looked over at Shirley, and I saw Shirley just sink back in the seat, and she just breathed a big sigh of relief. And I looked at her, and I said, what just happened to you? She said, I just felt his hand on my shoulder. She said, he whispered in my ear and told me to relax, that Sissy was going to be okay. She said, now, if you'll pull this van over, I'll drive us home before you kill us. That was on a Friday. And, boy, I mean, I couldn't get it back together. Shirley was okay. I got home. Sissy seemed to be okay with it. She said, Dad, I think I know which doctor I'm going to use. We're going to do this real quick. I said, bet we're going to do it real quick. And she said, and I want you to go see this doctor with me. And she thought maybe that talking to the doctor would help me. And so we went up there to see the doctor. This is a brain surgeon. Okay? We walked in this brain surgeon's waiting room. And Sissy took me over to the wall, and she said, read this plaque. There's a brain surgeon's office, and this is what the plaque said. It said, this medical practice believes in spiritual healing. And if you don't adhere to these principles, we suggest you find another doctor. A few minutes later, he called us back. He said, Sissy, I understand that you've already settled on me to do your surgery. And he said, I've looked at your x-rays, and I'm very capable. I can do that surgery. He said, what this is about is for me to make the decision of whether you qualify for our way of life. And the way we said, we don't take everybody that comes along. We don't run an assembly line over here. And she said, okay, what have I got to do to convince you? He said, well, I want to ask you one main question. She said, ask me anything. He said, in front of your dad? She said, yeah, ask me anything. He said, okay, tell me about God. That was his question. 45 minutes later, he tapped her on the knee and said, you're okay, huh? You're all right. Sunday, I talked at a local anniversary. And at the end of the talk, I told him about what I had heard, found out about Sissy, and I said, one more time, I'm mad at God. We get in the van, we're on our way home. Shirley looks at me and she says, well, you said you was mad at God. Are you really? And I said, you know what? I don't think I'm mad at God, but I'm by God mad. We rode on a little further and I looked over at Shirley and I said, you know what? I don't think I'm mad. So I'm scared. Scared, slapped to death. So see, all weekend long, I had been asking God to take away the anger. Well, see, I was asking him to take away a symptom of the problem, not the problem. See. And once I figured it out that what the problem was, see, that was Sunday afternoon. Then I went home and said, God, take away the fear. And he couldn't do it till Monday morning when I was in the doctor's office. And he relieved the fear. So here's the thing. Operated on her on Tuesday morning. Came into her room on Saturday morning. Said, get out of my hospital. I've done all I can do for you. Said, you're well. Go home and heal. Textbook surgery. You know that. You know, what we missed was that God was in charge of this thing because you ain't supposed to find aneurysms. And God sent us straight to that one. So he said, get out of my hospital and go home. And by the way, on the way out, stop by that intensive care waiting room. That's where y'all were. That was as close as you could get to her. He said, and tell them they can go home. Said, there's been an average of 25 to 30 people in there 24 hours a day since Sissy's been here. And said, the nurses have grown to love them. Said, they don't understand them. But they love them, but said, we can't have any more pizza parties down there in the waiting room. Y'all was ordering in pizza. Yeah. So that was 1997. So Sissy's now 11 years, 12 years, whatever. But anyhow, she's okay. She's all right. Aneurysm is an aneurysm, as she says. Yeah. So life gets back on a little bit of an even kilter, and we get through that, and we're moving right along, and in 1999, I started having some medical problems, and my life started changing a little bit, and in 2001, I had to have back surgery. I had to have a fusion in my lower spine. And I had to go on disability. And I didn't want to do that. I fought God on that. I said, God, come on. You know, I don't like but a few years more being retirement age. And need a few more years, get a few more things paid off, you know, things. But I couldn't. See, doctors kept telling me, we can't. You're not going to be able to work. And I couldn't. So finally I gave into it. I said, well, okay, we'll apply for disability. And so we did. And so I'm on disability now. Now, not too long after I had the surgery, I'm sitting there at the house. Shirley's at work. I got two things in my life today that work. That's my wife and my watch. And Shirley's gone off to work, and I'm sitting there at the house, and it's quiet, and me and God started having a conversation. And the conversation came around to this. I said, you know, God, several years ago, I made a commitment to you that I would go wherever you needed me to go and do whatever you needed me to do. And that I'd put you in charge of the schedule because you knew I still had a full-time job. And so you would work it around where I would be able to take the time off and go or do whatever I needed to do. And I said, God, I think I've held up pretty good to that commitment. He said, but it's got to change, God. I said, you know, I don't have a job anymore. I'm available to you, God, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I got to recommit, God. Here we are, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You put it out there, and I'll go do it. I want to share this with you, folk. Don't make that commitment unless you're ready to get busy. God's got a lot of work to be done out there, and he's looking for workers. Yeah. But if you want to have the time of your life and the ride of your life, hook up. Hook up. It's all about living good and be having fun. Fun and for free. Fun and for free. So, 2007. I'm running out of time, so I've got to give you some highlights here. April 2007. It's a beautiful day. I think it was April 17th or 19th, whatever. It's a beautiful day. It's a Thursday. And Bob had been out in the yard doing a little bit of stuff, and he came in the house, and he looked at Sissy, and he said, you know, I think I'm going to sit down here in my chair and maybe drink me a Mountain Dew and rest a little bit. And she said, well, now even though she doesn't have that aneurysm anymore, she still has migraine. She said, I feel a little bit of a headache coming on. Said, I'm going to take some medicine and lay down. Well, the medicine put her to sleep. So at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he sat down in his chair, and she took a pill, went in the bedroom, stretched out on the bed. She woke up at 7 o'clock and walked back into the living room, and Bob was sitting there in his chair, and he wasn't breathing. He wasn't alive. He was 50 years old, and he had had a massive heart attack and died right there in his chair. Charlie and I are down in Tuscaloosa, about 45 minutes away, when Sissy calls us on the phone and tells us what happened. I said, Sissy, we're on the way. On the way home, I'm talking to God. But I'm not hollering at God this time, you know, and I'm saying, God, I don't know what to do. Never been here before. All I know is that I'm the daddy, and when I walk in that door, I'm supposed to be of value to my daughter. I'm supposed to be of comfort. I'm supposed to be of help. And I don't know what to do. So, God, I'm putting this one in your hands. I'm going to get out of the van. I'm going to go up those steps, and I'm going in there, and you got it from there. We pulled up the house. I got out of the van. I went up those steps, and I walked in the living room. The coroner had not been there or anything. Bob was still sitting right there in his chair. And I walked over to her, and I put my arm around her. I said, Sissy, I don't know what to do. And she looked at me, and she said, oh, Dad, don't worry about it. It's already been done. I said, what do you mean it's already been done? She said, when I came in this room and I realized that Bob was dead, that there was no pulse and that there was no breath and that Bob was gone, she said, before I called anybody, before I did anything, she said, I got on my knees beside his chair and I took his hand in mine and I gave him back to God. She said, it's a done deal. It's a done deal. And I'm here today to say thank you to you people because y'all taught her that. Y'all taught her that. Y'all led her to that relationship with that God. It's happened right here in rooms like this. Some of you people in this room have been part of that. Powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. So, we've learned over our lives that we don't turn and run away anymore. We run, but we run too. We run to. We find y'all just as quick as we can, and we get right in the middle of you. Right in the middle of you. He died on Thursday. We buried him on Monday. On Saturday was Bessemer's AA and Al-Anon anniversary. Guess where we were? We were at the anniversary, right where we were supposed to be. Because we had to be around y'all. Yeah. Come to the power. So then not too long ago, Dennis and Sissy hook up. And Dennis first met them when they came down into Louisiana for Sissy to speak at a conference. So Dennis had met Bob, and he knew Bob and knew all about the deal. And finally, they talked a little bit back and forth, and I got to share this. Dennis called her and said, I'm coming up there and I'm taking you to the Bright Star for supper. Now, he lives 5 hours away. Now, the Bright Star is a real famous restaurant in our area. So he said, I'll be up there around, 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. And we're going to dinner. And he got up there and he walked in the house. And he looked at Sissy. I said, well, what do you think? What do you think about us starting out here on this relationship? And she said, well, I'm ready. I'm willing. And they both made the decision that in order for this relationship to work, it had to be founded in God's lap. So before they ever went up there to eat, they got on their knees and they took the third step prayer together. Gave their relationship to God. I believe it's got a chance. And Dennis is just like us. Dennis is coming up on 8 years of sobriety, and he loves the parties. Loves the parties. So he'll fit right. I mean, we're party goers. We're party goers. So I'm running out of time. So here's. It's time for me to close. I think I've kind of brought you up to date on everything and let you know that Shirley's doing well today. Sissy's doing well today. The two dogs, we got two very spiritual beings out there. One of them they call a beagle, and the other one they call a lab retriever, black lab. Our beagle is 12 years old, and her give-a-damn is broke. And she runs the hill. She's our black lab is she's about 3.5 years old, and she weighs 105 pounds, and she still thinks she's a lap baby. And they have the run of the hill and the houses, and she comes in, wants to get up in my lap, and they're just love machines. They're spiritual beings. They really are, and they've played a special part in our life, and that's where we are today. Is living life as God would have us to live it. Shirley gets up earlier than me in the morning, and she has her quiet time when she has her coffee and has her prayer and starts her day. And then I'll get up, and she'll look at me, and she'll say, "Well, Spook joined me in prayer this morning." That's the big lamb. And I said, "Well, that's all right. Spook's going to have a good day, too." So now it's time for me to close, and I want to close by making this deal with you folks. And I've made this deal with some folks in this room, so I know the deal works. Okay, and here's the deal. I'm one of those Al-Anons that's never seen the flash of light or the burning bush. I've never felt the cool breeze. But the God that I have in my life today talked to me more regularly than he ever has in my life. And darned if when God talks to me today, darned if it doesn't look and sound a whole lot like you. That's the vital part you play in my life today. You are my channel. You are my channel. Now, I've already told you just how powerful my God is. So now that you know how powerful he is, and now that you know the part that you play in my relationship, here's the deal. I'm going to keep coming back. Rooms like this full of folks like you. Now, you're part of the deal. I want you to keep coming back. Rooms like this full of folks like us. Now, if I keep coming back and you keep coming back, then one day, somewhere down the road, our paths will cross again as we trudge this road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you so much.